On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, pure chaos and little else. Rafael Devers is now a member of the San Francisco Giants. We'll probably talk about that. Shohei Ohtani is going to pitch tomorrow, so we'll talk about that. And then there were 8 sweeps. We'll talk about that really quickly. Buckle up. I mean, this is going to be a wild one, friends. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that can't wait to see Rafael Devers pitch tomorrow for the Los Angeles Dodgers. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and am I mixing up my designated hitters?
Sunday night. This is not when we're supposed to get two of the biggest pieces of baseball news of the entire season, but here we are. We could not wait until Monday morning to record a podcast. I was overeager to just get back on this microphone and talk ball with you. Great weekend of baseball. You were at a wedding in California. I was busy moving into a house I just bought. So it's been a weird 48 hours for both of us. Now you're in Omaha, Nebraska.
Sure.
Watching the College World Series, which of course has taken a backseat to the massive Major League Baseball news we got tonight.
And while it's been a weird day for us, you moving houses, me waking up in Lake Tahoe at 4 a.m. Pacific time and sleeping in Omaha, not as weird of a day as it was for Rafael Devers, who is now on the San Francisco Giants.
Okay, so by the way, if you're expecting this to be like a normal weekend recap where we really sink our teeth into what's going on with the Nationals, why do the Royals keep losing? I would love to talk more about that. It's not happening. We're going to be throwing 13 series into turbo mode, including 8 more sweeps, but we are going to focus on Rafael Devers being traded to the San Francisco Giants and Shohei Ohtani pitching baseballs in a real baseball game against the Padres on Monday. Let's start with Rafael Devers. As you mentioned, we thought we had a weird day. Oh my gosh.
Hey, I took 2 flights today.
Yeah.
I was not pulled off of either flight, which was the case with Rafael Devers. So let's set the stage. Today, 6 p.m. Oh, I guess it was 7 p.m. Eastern.
7 Eastern. 7 Eastern.
Yep. I'm 6 Central where I am in Omaha. I sit down at my seat in the press box. I have my wheelie bag straight from the airport. I open up my scorebook. I'm ready to watch Coastal Carolina take on the Oregon State Beavers. And I'm about to write the first name in the notebook, like in the scorebook.
Oh, scorebook. But yep.
I'm like writing Caden Bodine, like as a leadoff guy. And then my phone's just boop. Rafael Devers has been traded to the San Francisco Giants. And I think the first thought that everyone had is this really Jeff Passan's account?
So, yes, and there's so many, again, the experience is the same thing, but we got to give credit where credit is due, Jake Mintz. I know
Big
that
Bob.
who is first is, you know, some people think it's overrated. Some people, if you're, you know, dorks like us, you care way too much about it. Robert Murray. I mean, what a moment. He tweets in all caps breaking, which that we've talked plenty about on the show. You know, he understands. I've talked to Robert about this. He understands learning, one of the younger insiders that we have in our industry, understanding what an all caps breaking is. And he tweeted all caps breaking Rafael Devers to Giants. And he had the names too shortly after. San Francisco Giants are acquiring Rafael Devers from the Boston Red Sox for Jordan Hicks, Kyle Harrison, and more, according to sources familiar with the deal. But to your point, we trust Robert Murray. He has become very credible.
Sure.
But this is so absurd that we had to wait. We had to wonder, is this real? And as we had the experience for the Hoops fans out there with the Luka Doncic trade, now that was in the middle of the night. And in the case of a big basketball trade, Shams has kind of the monopoly on the information in the way that Woj did. But in baseball, we do have a few more that can confirm these things. And very quickly, over that next half an hour, here come the Red Sox, here come the Giants reporters, here comes Jeff Passan. And we start to understand that Rafael Devers is no longer on the Boston Red Sox.
What is the trade? The trade is Devers to the Giants in exchange for starting pitcher Kyle Harrison, pitcher Jordan Hicks, hitting prospect James Tibbs III, Jimmy Three Sticks, and Jose Bello, a low-level complex league Dominican pitcher.
And all of Rafael Devers' contract.
And that is what is important. Let's get that out of the way. There is a world, maybe, where these four names that maybe some of you folks that don't even know these names, you're like, those must be the top four prospects in the Giants system. Jose Bello throws 104. That is not the case here. Okay, let's get this out of the way quickly. Kyle Harrison has had some big league time. He's shown he's got the most upside of anybody in this trade. Big fastball, hasn't performed in the big leagues yet. James Tibbs III, top pick last year, first rounder, cannot hit left-handed pitching, powerful corner outfield bat, probably a platoon guy.
Best Jordan, case scenario is he's 60% as good as Rafael Devers.
50%. Jordan Hicks, you probably know. He's been in the big leagues for a while, signed to be a starter. He's been disastrous this year, moved to the bullpen with the Giants.
Still throwing hard.
Jose Bello made good numbers in the low minors, might not make it above high A, who knows. Total lottery ticket. This is a salary dump. For all intents and purposes for the Boston Red Sox, it is dumping the remaining $250 million or so on Rafael Devers' contract, which runs through the 2033 season, freeing up the DH spot, getting some roster flexibility, and if you believe the reports coming out of Boston, which I believe are being said, getting rid of a clubhouse problem. Because this is the thing. Now we got to do context, right? So one of the main storylines of this baseball season has been Rafael Devers' fit within the Red Sox. The Red Sox have been the messiest team in the league, I would say. And the second that they sign Alex Bregman, they say he's going to play third. They say, Rafi, you're going to go DH. Rafi says, I'm a third baseman. It gets messy. They move him to DH. He eventually drags his feet and he agrees to do it. Tristan Casas blows out his knee. Hey, Rafi, can you slide in and go play first base? No, I'm a DH. That happened about a month ago, I would say. And the whole time, Rafi has done nothing but rake. He is having the best season of his career. I believe he is 11th in OPS. He's going to be an all-star. He's looked awesome. But behind the scenes, I guess now we know with hindsight that this was not a sustainable setup for whatever reason.
Yeah. And I think the exact specifics of did he demand a trade versus this relationship was untenable versus exactly how we get to him being traded at this stage. So I think this is another interesting part about this. And I want to get back to the premise of the salary dump in a second. But the actual specifics, and I am looking forward to reading a lot of reporting about this in the coming days and weeks and years, for that matter, about how we actually ended up at this point. Because it's amazing that we've been talking about this nonstop since Alex Bregman signed, and yet this still came out of nowhere to a lot of people. That is a shocking thing. We hear some stuff. Oh, Buster Posey was asking about Devers a few weeks ago. Okay, when does this actually come together? But the specifics of did Rafael Devers say, you have to trade me, versus the Red Sox identifying, okay, he hasn't said you have to trade me, but this is not comfortable right now, and this is not heading in a good direction. And then you add in, let's get back to the salary dump element of it, because this is the part that is so difficult for me to wrap my mind around. Normally, when you're talking about salary dumps, we're talking about a contract that for a while now has felt bad.
Chris Davis, David Price going to the Dodgers, right?
Yes, like, yes. That's a better example. There's ones where it's like, and oftentimes it's maybe shorter term deals where it's like a big money over our short terms. And it's like, I need to get this off my books because for whatever reason, we ended up in a situation where we didn't really like this. But for this same, I know it's not the same GM, but for this same ownership group who passionately, happily gave Rafael Devers a massive extension for over $300 million. And now just this couple years later have decided, no, we don't feel good about this. When he has shown no sign of decline, and the only reason that he is in the position where it's like, oh my God, is he going to be a DH only for the next 10 years? Is because of how you chose to construct your roster is really, really remarkable to watch. Because sure, you could say, oh God, what's Rafael Devers going to look like when he's 35?
Who cares? What are we going to look like when we're 35?
That the Boston Red Sox, I also won't be able to play third base when I'm 35. That the Boston Red Sox could be concerned about that right now to make this trade for any reason is beyond just mind-blowing. Like, truly, truly mind-blowing.
You got to go back to the Mookie Betts trade. Because that is where the distrust begins. Mookie traded. We have a pretty good idea now. That was an edict from ownership to Chaim Bloom. An ownership decision. Mookie gets traded. There's unease within Red Sox world. And in a way, the Devers extension was framed as the solution, as the solve, as the panacea.
That was
as
getting the trust back. We're moving back in the right direction.
Exactly. And now by trading him, you are asking a lot from your fan base, right? Now, look, Red Sox fans are going to show up. They're going to spend money. You're going to get rich off of them. We know that. Okay. Fenway Park prints money. The area around the stadium prints money. Great. Whatever. Then why are the Red Sox acting like a mid-market team that doesn't want to invest in its players?
So let's keep the focus on Boston. I'm very excited to talk about the Giants element. So we're going to get to that. There's Giants fans listening to this, but like, hello, we got Rafael Devers. Can you please talk about how cool that is? We're going to get there.
But I want to hop in on that point because that is relevant. And I just wrote about that on Yahoo. But this is a Red Sox conversation because when a player of this caliber, an aircraft carrier like Devers, a franchise cornerstone, gets moved, that is the decision of the team that employs him to begin with, right? This whole thing has to start with, why did Craig Breslow, the chief baseball officer of the Red Sox, and his bosses, the ownership group, want to trade and decide to trade Rafael Devers? Right. How it fits in with like Bryce Eldridge. Like that's like the seventh level of the conversation. Right.
Yes, I agree with that. Now, I do want to say, though, as we keep the focus on Boston here, there is a huge conversation about just like how the Red Sox ended up here, how they ended up making this decision, all the ways that they mishandled the relationship with Devers, that they chose to construct their roster in ways that would make him unhappy. But also, again, like, let's bring Alex Bregman into the conversation. That was another move that started to win the fans back from a trust, from a we're going for it perspective.
Crochet,
right? Not to mention, and now we know that so far in the standings, it hasn't necessarily reflected, but we know this, and they just swept the Yankees. We're clearly barely going to talk about that, okay? But let's keep this hyper-focused on the baseball, okay? Clearly, they did not want to be paying Rafael Devers $31 million in 2032. Why they're concerned about that right now, that's fine. Let's just move past that. Let's talk about the baseball part of this, okay? How does this make the Red Sox better right now? What is the part? How are they selling to the fans when... Now, listen, Sam Kennedy and Craig Breslow are going to speak to the media on Monday. We have not heard how they're going to describe this, okay? But the first part is going to be to explain how the relationship ended up where it was and how they believe they needed to move him. And then they're going to have to try and explain why this is going to help the Red Sox win to make the playoffs this year, which from all based on all their impossible actions over the last year is what they have been doing, or at least seemingly have been trying to do. And by the way, I mentioned Alex Bregman because what if he leaves? Now what? It's all on the kids. All right, Roman Anthony, you better be an all-star right away. Hey, Marcel Myers.
That goes completely against everything that they have said, where the messaging around the big three of Campbell, Meyer, and Anthony has been, we don't want to rely on these guys. We don't want to put pressure on them to make them feel like they need to perform right away. Well, you know what's a good way to make three rookies feel some pressure? Is trading away the best hitter on your team.
And if you're Bregman, like, to me, the only way you win the PR here is to like extend Bregman or to like restructure his contract.
Sure.
That you know that, because here's the thing. If you told me, if the Red Sox had signed him last offseason and said, we think he's just better than Devers, he should be our third baseman. Here, Alex Bregman, here's a 7-year deal. I would be like, okay, that's, if you can tell Rafael Devers to play first base or DH, fine. You're a better team. Great. Cool. Bregman's playing third and Devers is hitting. Cool. with Bregman's contract situation, with Bregman being injured right now, what do they think? He's less likely to opt? Maybe, I guess. But if you're Bregman, do you think your team's better right now? Because you have Jordan Hicks and Kyle Harrison? You think so? Maybe. But that, I would be surprised by that.
I want to talk about the PR side of this. We've already seen some reporting along these lines, and I think we'll start to see more, that will frame Rafael Devers as unwilling to move positions and how that is unbecoming of a player that is earning his level of salary. And I do think that that is a legitimate point to an extent, that if we are paying you $29.5 million a year and we ask you to go move over to first base, that is something that you should be willing to do, right? Well, you shouldn't have given that guy the money in the first place, or you should have presented that information to him in a different manner, right? That you, that he didn't move is not purely a reflection of him being stubborn. It is also a reflection of how you presented that information, how you convinced him to do it. And so as we get this information that comes out, I'm not like questioning the reporting here. I'm saying it's important to recognize the source, because if I'm Craig Breslow and I'm trying to spin this in the right way, I'm going to talk to Red Sox people off the record on background and be like, hey, you know, there were some issues with Rafi in the room. And like, you got to be careful with how you read that and how that gets reported, because it is in his best interest now to throw Rafi under the bus and to paint him as an issue. Maybe it was an issue. Okay. Maybe there are things that we don't know. I'm willing to accept that if that's true. But the message, like, that's, it's really tricky area right
and
there,
this
right?
This is not when you're already a front office and ownership that doesn't have a recent track record of nailing it when it comes to PR, when it comes to messaging. That is what is so astonishing to me. And I do think that the Devers thing, we've talked about this all season. We've talked to, you know, Ryan Spielberg's about it. We've talked to players. We've talked to other media people. We've talked to, you know, we've asked people around the game, on the record, off the record, whatever. And on one hand, you could say, yeah, when Casas goes down, the sensible thing that people look at and be like, okay, yeah, Rafi, play first base, dude. Come on. At the same time, you could also look at it and be like, what has Rafael Devers done the whole time? He's hit as a designated hitter, which they wanted him to do. Has he been a little whiny along the way? Yes, for sure. But
has he raked?
Yeah. Yeah. And like the first base situation, by the way, recently sort of kind of has been working itself out. God bless Abe Toro. You know, sure. Is that a long-term plan? I don't know. But again, it's just, that's the thing. And I'm glad you made that point, because, I'm excited to record again later this week when we have heard from the Red Sox, because I just don't know how they can communicate this in a way that is like, we're trying to win right now. I mean, I guess you can, again, the deadline's still more than a month away. They can make more additions on offense, but it's just so strange. It's just so strange. Yeah. So we have to spin this. Anything else on Boston? We have to spin this back to the Giants. Yeah.
I want to talk about very quickly the character dynamics with Breslow and Cora.
Yes. Cora was the last thing we have to talk about here. Yes.
So, when Rafi originally said he didn't want to DH and said, they told me when they signed me that they wouldn't move me to DH yet. And Cora and Breslow essentially said, that was a different leadership group. Those promises don't hold water. Sorry. That doesn't make that much sense to me, because it's the same ownership group. It's the same leader. Like, it's still the same apparatus to an extent. So now Breslow comes in. Craig Breslow has not earned the benefit of the doubt. He has developed a reputation as someone who doesn't have the feel of the room, who doesn't interact with players well, who even as a former player is somewhat robotic, right? And this does not help his cause at all. He has not earned the benefit of the doubt. He has not built a winner under the Red Sox. The three best players, the three best prospects were all, I believe, drafted and acquired by the Chaim Bloom regime. Great. You acquired Greer Crochet. Great. Abe Toro and Romy Gonzalez look like good pieces. Carlos Novaez, masterclass, 10 points for Gryffindor. Happy for you. Big win. But is this guy good at this job? I don't know. He has not proven it to us, right? At all. In any way. And I think it is totally fair for Red Sox fans to be like, who the hell is this guy?
Yes. That said, this is not to defend Breslow. This is not a decision that is just Craig Breslow playing fantasy baseball. It's just not. Now, he absolutely must believe that
Here's the difference between this and the Mookie trade. I'm going to defend Chaim here for a second. For Chaim, the mess that the Red Sox were in was not something that Chaim created, right? He takes the job and the ownership group's like, you have to trade Mookie. And you're like, okay, fine. This made, issue made with a bad Devers.
Trade. Still a bad made, trade.
Still a bad trade. Still a bad trade.
But,
bad trade.
But how you got players. There for sure. Yes.
Sure. I understand that Breslow shows up and Devers is already in the books. But the other stuff around it, that's still Breslow's fault.
100%. 100%. That said, this decision is just such a monumental decision that ownership has to play a part. That's why we're talking about the money. And that's why we're talking about the players too, because and by the way, Breslow still has to be like, this is a good idea. This still seems to be something that Breslow says this is a good idea and not ownership saying, hey, we have to trade Rafael Devers. Whereas with Mookie, it felt like we have to because he's about to leave. That's what I just like, my mind is blown. I cannot believe that this ownership group ended up at this decision. Yeah. And part of that is letting Breslow build it to the way that it became problematic.
Look, smart people in baseball who run teams are going to look at this trade and be like, Red Sox got more dollars per war and they got out from under a bad contract and good job by Breslow. And like, that is just a line of thinking that I disagree with. Will the Devers contract age poorly? Maybe. Sure. Okay. But when you trade a guy like it's hard to acquire Rafael Devers's. Okay. These guys don't grow on trees. You can't just create them. And there's a good chance that none of Anthony Campbell or Meyer are as good as Devers, right?
Great chance.
As hyped
great
as they're going to be.
Great chance. Right? great Devers. Chance. He's got 200 homers. He's 28. I mean, he's got, 500 extra base hits. I mean,
it's just getting so too smart for your own good here. And that's what's frustrating. It's like, okay, great. You won the trade on a spreadsheet.
Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe.
But okay.
What kind of message are you sending to the room? Two, it's like if I'm on the Red Sox and I'm going in there tomorrow, like, do I think that we're a better team today? The only way that this entire thing makes any sense, and then we'll talk about the Giants, is that Rafi was legitimately an issue, right?
Yeah.
Like, if Rafi was legitimately a sourpuss who was pissing off the team and there was a legitimate clubhouse cancer and Breslow's like, this is really hurting the room. If that is the, okay, there's like a 5 to 10% to 20% chance that that is what happened. Okay.
It's on the table for sure.
It's on the table. That is the only reading to me where doing this deal makes sense for the Red Sox.
And even that
exactly
is really hard from when you consider the specific context of the Boston Red Sox, where they are as a franchise, how long it's been since they have been relevant relative to how when they normally are very good all the time, and what this fan base has gone through. And I understand there's something. Who cares about the Red Sox fans? Why should you feel bad for them? And that's fine. If you want to laugh at them, I get it. Yankees fans, you just got swept for the first time this season. You're laughing all your ass off at the Red Sox. That's great. Have at it. But I do think that if you consider that part of it, it is hard to say. Now, as we spin it to the Giants, let's go back to something that you just said. These guys don't come around very often. They're not available. Okay, you could say Juan Soto was available in free agency, and the Giants sort of tried and didn't come close to making that happen, right? Listen, Rafael Devers ain't Juan Soto. He's a lot closer to Juan Soto than any other hitter the Giants have had recently.
Since Barry Bonds?
Okay, so Buster Posey was pretty good. Now, that was a little bit different. Now, let's talk about Buster Posey. Very recently on the show. As so the Giants I wanna, have been, yeah.
I want to hop back to what you said about you don't get players like this, right?
Yeah.
There was a whole lot of narrative gobbledygook about players not wanting to sign in San Francisco. Remember this? I think it's true to an extent. I think that the Giants proved it was not true by just overpaying for Willy Adames and extending Matt Chapman, right? But if you think that that is relevant to any point, and we have seen it be somewhat relevant in their failure to sign Judge, Otani, Soto, whatever, you got to go and get them. Trade for Stanton. Yeah. They've been thwarted various times. And so when you have an opportunity to go and get a needle-moving player like this, where you don't have to sign him, you do it. And Buster Posey, the Po-Bosey, I am just happy that he exists as a character, that we have a baseball executive that is willing to operate differently. Look, does he know what he's doing? Maybe, maybe not.
We don't know. He doesn't even know.
He doesn't know. If I was starting it, if I was an owner, would I hire Buster Posey to be my GM? Absolutely not. Not even a little bit. But I am happy as someone who looks at this game and enjoys the dynamics that we have someone who is willing to zag at the very least.
And I think the way that Buster Posey has talked about what his goals are for restoring the Giants to glory, he talks about memory making, he talks about what it means to be a Giant and having these franchise pillars to build around that everybody should, that fans should care about and want to have their jerseys. And he feels like that that's what they've lost, you know, since 2021. And I think that there's some very real, that's a very real criticism. You could also say that a lot of things that they have are good. This wasn't all Farhan's fault, whatever. But
is Buster Posey above all else that Craig Breslow is not?
He's a ball player. he's no. cool. No. He's beloved.
He's a Giants fan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's a Giants fan. And I don't think that the optimal amount of GM being a fan is either Craig Breslow, beep, bop, boop, bop, or Buster Posey, franchise icon, I bleed orange. It's probably somewhere in the middle. But we are seeing the two ends of the spectrum here interact with one another. Where
that's true.
Breslow is willing to crumble up the idea of like important to the franchise legacy history and be like, we'll take Jordan Nicks. Whereas Buster Posey is doing anything he can, going above and beyond to try and create that type of dynamic.
Yes, very true. Now, here's the other main point that we have to bring up, which is also relevant to Buster Posey, who before he was GM was part of the Giants ownership. This is another thing we have to understand about this. And when we think about how does this come out of nowhere, have the Red Sox been shopping Rafael Devers for a while? If Buster Posey's been talking to the Red Sox about Rafael Devers for weeks, how does this not come out? Blah, 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 blah. The main point I want to just remind people, which is maybe obvious, there's really only so many teams that can trade for Rafael Devers. So when the premise that Rafael Devers could get traded as he was be unhappy and like it was thrown out there, like, is Devers going to demand a trade? And I would be like, that's ridiculous, partially because I think Rafael Devers wants to be on the Red Sox and partially because there's just only so many teams that are capable of trading for a $300 million contract. Whether it's a good contract or not, even if it's a great contract, that's still a lot of money that only so many teams can absorb. Now, this isn't me crying poor for it. Now, more teams can do it than are probably actually claim that they can. But the number of teams that are willing to do it, regardless of the roster fit, which we can get into in a second, which is also very compelling, the Giants had to have an appetite to spend money, not just as you mentioned before that they couldn't get free agents to sign. They've been wanting to spend money somehow. This is a way to do that. Yep. This is a way to do that. Just sure, we'll take it on, and that way we only have to give up Hicks Harrison and James Tibbs the third.
And so Jose Bayo. And Jose Bayo, Bayo number two for the Red Sox. Where does Devers fit? So this is interesting to me because part of the whole conundrum in Boston is that he wanted to play third base and they got someone else to do it. And he is being traded to a team where the third base spot is pretty shored up. Now, Matt Chapman is currently on the IL and is going to be out and has been out for a stretch. And whether where Rafael Devers is playing tomorrow or the next day for the Giants is going to be fascinating, right? But let's just say for the next 5 years, Matt Chapman is the everyday third baseman, right? Devers is not playing third base over
that
Matt
That was Chapman. Their plan. Yeah, okay. I don't think so. Yeah.
Sure. Is he going to be willing to play first? Is he going to play first for the Giants?
So again.
Because here's the thing. The Giants are not the ones who promised it, who told him that he couldn't play third base and then moved him to DH.
And Devers, right, he has no loyalty to the Giants. The Giants have no loyalty. Like, obviously, they want Devers to be happy because they just signed up to have him on their team for a lot of money for the next bunch of years. But now, there's also, like, a gaping hole at DH. Sorry, Wilmer Flores, it's been fun. He could just keep DHing, and that would make all the sense in the world.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yes, but.
Yeah.
Yes, but.
No, it's true. It's compelling. Would he be more willing to play first for the Giants? I don't know.
My biggest concern with the Devers contract as it is that is a lot of money and a lot of time to give to a DH. A great hitter, yes, but you are clogging up your DH spot. And clogging up your DH spot, this sounds like I'm doing GM brain, I understand. Mm-hmm. But it really does restrict you from doing a bunch of different things, right? Getting a guy off his feet, bringing a prospect up and not wanting him to play the field. Let's say Elliot Ramos like tweaks his ankle or like hurts his arm and he can't throw, but he can continue to hit. Like there are all these little things that clogging up your DH spot could be problematic. And so it is in the Giants' best interest. I know Shohei Ohtani is different.
Yeah, one exception. He's, if you want to clog it up with Shohei, that's fine. In general,
clog away.
For sure.
Keep clogging. I think Devers will do some DHing and do some first basing and they'll switch that back and forth. And that's how it should have been the whole time in San Francisco or in Boston. And dude, this is nuts.
It's just for the last few hours, like I'm glad I had a few more hours to think about this and we're going to both write about it. And there's so much more to do. And I'm sure we'll talk about it more later this week, but so many things about this that are just beyond fascinating. And I'm sure there's 10 other things that we're not even mentioning that we should be. Let us know. Email us, baseballbarbecast@gmail.com. Should we talk about the Red Sox? What happened to them this weekend? It feels weird to do that.
Red Sox, great weekend for the Red Sox. They swept the Yankees at home.
Did you see homered today?
Who homered?
Rafael Devers.
The Red Sox tweeted, what did they tweet? That's gone. They tweeted, that's gone.
Yeah.
With a gif of Rafi Devers. They tweeted
that
this
is
at 2
gone.
O'clock today.
He is gone.
That is gone.
500th career extra base hit. And they were
he did it.
I've seen enough.
Too much. Too many.
To San Francisco with you.
The Friday night Yankees Red Sox game was unbelievable. And I wish we could spend more time on that. Garrett Crochet.
Oh, I know.
Big pig energy going into the ninth. Like, unreal at bat with Judge. Judge takes him to tie it. Cool stuff. Red Sox walk it off. Great.
Narvaez,
Red Sox beat the Yankees.
Narvaez awesome. We love Narvaez.
Our producer, Andrew Hartz, is a Yankees fan. Is this the best you've ever felt as a Yankees fan after getting swept by the Red Sox? It has to be.
First time the Yankees have been swept this year. They lost the series last week, to Boston. So
what's
tough
so
start
funny,
against the Red Sox.
You know what's so funny about this is the difference between like the way players think and the way fans think. Like the Red Sox, the Yankees players, when they got on the plane and saw Devers was traded, they're not like amped. They're like, oh, that's weird. That's good for us, I guess. But they don't feel any better on the plane, right? The plane is, or the bus or whatever, is not happier because it got traded. Whereas every Yankees fan is like cracking open a cold one.
Yes.
Right now, feeling awesome.
Yes. And so, and again, just like on Boston, like they've won 5 in a row. They're over 500 for the first time since May 24th. But who's been a big part of them playing well? Rafael Devers. So I know they optioned Kyle Harrison to AAA. He was supposed to start Sunday Night Baseball. That's also weird. Clearly, they think Kyle Harrison can help them and Hicks can help them this year. They have to believe that. They have to believe that if they're willing to do this in a year that they have to be trying. Because, again, we glossed over the Cora part, but like Cora has to be feeling Cora. I can't. Even, that's a whole other conversation.
Is this,
I'm excited
this like
to hear
Cora? Is this like Cora losing a power struggle?
It seems like it. I think so. So I don't know what to make of that, right? Because Cora got extended. We thought Cora had more pull than Breslau. Anyway, okay. So
let's take a break.
They're still in fourth place. Yeah, they're 6.5 games behind the Yankees, but they're kind of back in it. But like, what are the Red Sox now? I don't know. And these two teams are not going to play again until late August. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Shohei Ohtani. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbecast. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, normally the first segment of our show is called The Opener. However, Rafael Devers will not be opening for the San Francisco Giants this week, but Shohei Ohtani will be opening for the Los Angeles Dodgers on Monday, and that makes him our second segment opener.
Shohei Ohtani underwent Thomas Johnson surgery in... This is one of those dates that is seared into my brain now. Jordan, like, watch this, guys. Jordan, what's Bryce Harper's birthday?
October 18th.
What's Mike Trout's birthday?
August 7th,
1991. Shohei Ohtani got Tommy John surgery on September 19th, 2023.
Oh, October 16th. I'm sorry, Bryce. It's late. Go ahead.
Anyway, Ohtani, September 19th, 2023, Tommy John. The Dodgers slow played him. Last year, he won the MVP, he won the World Series. If you're listening, you know all this stuff, blah, 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 whatever. I have seen Ohtani throw a couple bullpens this year. I saw him do that first live outing by BP at Citi Field. And the general consensus around the Dodgers, the messaging that was kind of filtering out was, Ohtani is not likely to pitch before the All-Star break. Okay? I reported that, kind of, and I felt good about that. And I think it's important talking about what has changed since then. Okay, what has changed? I think, one, Ohtani looks better than the Dodgers thought he'd look. I think their pitching needs have gotten more dire. And I think maybe there was some misdirection involved from the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Yeah, it's probably a combination of those things. You know, we've speculated all season, I mean, even last season, right? Like, how much is Shohei calling the shots? And honestly, the way Dave Roberts talked about it after the game tonight, where he was like, he's let us know, like, he's getting antsy, like, he wants to pitch. I imagine after his most recent live BP, where he's dominating, and it's like, yeah, it's been a year and a half, almost 2 years since I got Tommy John. Like, let me cook. I'm one of the best pitchers in the world. Let me go throw one inning. Fine. That's fine. I'll go get in the lineup and hit a bunch of homers. I'll do that. And then let's build me up. Let's throw one inning this week. Let's throw, you know, a few innings the next week. And let's work towards something to where I can be back to full Shohei by the end of the season. And it's freaking awesome. I mean, it's not, I'm so excited. This is great. And the fact that they're going to do it against the Padres is all the better. The fact that they announced this right after the Giants trade for Rafael Devers doesn't, I mean, you know, maybe I'm overthinking it, but it feels like a nice little move from them. And to your point, it's probably a combination of a lot of things where Shohei, he's probably like, look, guys, what are we waiting for? It's not like you don't need innings. I don't count as a pitcher on the roster, so you can keep doing your shenanigans and shuffling guys up and down. Emmett Sheehan is now back. Roky Sasaki is not back. This was another topic that we probably would talk about more if we didn't have all these other things going on. Doesn't seem like he's pitching anytime soon. Glasnow, Snell slowly working their way back, but not exactly imminent. So here we are, man. Ohtani's going to pitch again. And after another weekend where he had a bunch of hits, a couple homers, it's like just a reminder that we get to keep doing this, which is so cool because, you know, there, even over the last year and a half, it's like, oh, are they gonna say, no, dude, you're too good of a hitter? It's like, no, this is the whole point. This is what Ohtani is all about. This is his life's work. This is his life's purpose, is to do this one thing that nobody else has ever done. And I'm excited he's gonna get to do it again. Pretty simple.
What does success look like? He's only gonna throw one inning. Are we sure?
It seems like it. I mean, I assume he'll face, you know, Tatis and Chato and Arise and call it a day. Go homer in the next inning. Who's pitching for San Diego on Monday? Let's see if we have
that. Is something I'm very
Dylan Cease,
about.
Who he has homered off of, I think, multiple times.
We're gonna get the thing where he throws the first inning.
They're at home, so he'll pitch first.
He'll pitch first, then he'll walk into the dugout, and he'll put on his helmet.
Strap it on, baby.
Strap it on, and he'll go hit. It's so funny, dude.
It's the coolest. I do miss, like, the two-way Ohtani thing that, like, I really miss is not the first inning. It's, like, when his outing is done, and he looks exhausted, and he's just, like, putting the elbow guard on. It's like, all right, gotta go hit a home run.
He's got, like, a towel on his neck. Like,
how are you alive? How are you standing, let alone walking, running, hitting home runs?
Yeah.
He's the best. I'm excited.
Not to be a Deborah Downer.
Oh, yeah.
the risk level goes up now. Okay.
Sure. The workload, you're building the workload a little, but again, it's been almost 2 years. So,
okay.
Yeah.
There is only so much his body can handle. Okay. Yeah. There is.
I mean, that turned out to be true in 2023. So,
and it turned out to be true in 2018. Like, would I rather have 5 more years of 2-way Ohtani or 10 more years of 1-way Ohtani?
I'd rather have 5 more years of 2-way Ohtani.
Bingo. 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 There are a lot of good hitters that we can watch for a long time.
Yeah.
No one's going to do this again. But there is an element of risk in it because you are just putting more weight on the back of the camel.
And as everything, every day that Shohei wakes up, he's essentially doing something unprecedented. And so that will only continue. And part of that is not the waking up part, just, you know, what he does after that. The risk management is all true. And it's also all, as I said, unprecedented. There's no roadmap. They don't know. He doesn't know. We don't know. So we can say, watch out. Oh, no, this is too much. Maybe, maybe not. I'm glad that he wants to keep trying because it's more fun that way. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But I'm glad we don't have to wait much longer because I was getting a little sick of just the BP every week. Okay, now carousel. It's 50 pitches, now 60 pitches. And Dave Roberts is like, I don't know. They're like, yeah, screw it. Here, he's pitching.
I'll go Ohtani homer in his second at bat tomorrow. I'll go
okay.
One inning. I'll go 2 Ks and a walk.
A walk. Okay. No hits. Yeah. I like that.
He's going to walk Luis Arraez.
The one other one I do want to say, and I think you've mentioned this on here, then we'll talk quickly about this Dodgers-Giants series, and then we'll take a break. I think you've asked this question on here before, but I do think the fact that he's now back, now counting this as a start is a little goofy, but just looking at these, and now again, with this Sasaki update, he's probably just off the board now. But when we're trying to guess now, who is going to start more games from now until the end of the season or through the postseason?
Just do innings
between
pitched.
Innings pitched. Okay, great. Innings pitched between Ohtani, Snell, Glasnow, Sasaki, and honestly, Kershaw. Let's keep Kershaw in there. Kershaw, 7 scoreless on Saturday. Who you got? I think at this point, Sasaki has to be last.
Yeah.
And I think at this point, Kershaw be in the top three. Okay.
Kershaw won.
Wow. All right. Yeah.
Because they just need innings. They need innings.
Yeah.
They need
innings. And he seems to be healthy. Still not throwing very hard, but yeah, I think he is probably number one.
I will go Kershaw, Snell, Ohtani, Glasnow, Sasaki.
Sasaki. Yeah. If we get a more substantial Sasaki update, we will... He's throwing a lot. We can have a longer conversation about Sasaki at some other point. I guess Emmett Sheehan would be another one to throw in here now that he's back. All right. Dodgers win the series against the Giants. Giants win the series opener. Logan Webb was awesome. Willie Adames homered. Kershaw was great on Saturday. Ohtani had 2 homers. Dodgers put Kike on the mound, up 11-0. He gives up 5 runs and has Bonda come in. Terrible. Hate that. 3 more Ohtani hits on Sunday night when I was not watching because I was out to dinner. But I mean, this trade broke like 2 minutes before first pitch. So I assume they were just talking about that the whole time. Seemed like a pretty good game, but the Dodgers won 5-4. So they kind of have gotten through this run, this first run of Padres Giants, and they've maintained first place. Sure. They will now play the Padres again this week.
They're 2 games up in the division. Every time Kike pitches, the Dodgers should have to make a donation to charity or something. Like, you can do it, but you have to give money.
They got plenty of money.
To a good cause.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we return, we're going to turbo mode through the rest of the weekend. And we'll see how this goes, folks. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbecue.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast.
Faster than fast, quicker than quick. I am lightning.
I feel the need for speed.
It's turbo time.
I am in the radio booth at Charles Schwab Field, aka the Chuck Box in Omaha, Nebraska. Over my shoulder, you can kind of make out the lobby of an unnamed hotel brand, no free ads, where there is a cold beer waiting for me. And I can't remember the last time I wanted a cold beer this thoroughly.
But job's not finished, Jake Mintz. This is still a weekend recap.
Yep.
And we have to mention every team. We're not going to talk about it for very long, but we have 13 more series, including 8 more sweeps. So honestly, Devers and Ohtani kind of did us a favor because I'm not sure how we were going to organize this anyway. So
hashtag sweeps week.
Let's, I don't know what order these are in, but Heidi, what do you want to just take turns?
I got it. Marlins sweep the Nationals. Very weird things are going on in DC where, Nats manager David Martinez asked about the Nats struggles. Is it the coaching? And he says, it's never the coaching. Can't be. Me? Couldn't be. If me, could, then who? You?
So then they're like, so is it the players?
The players?
It's not the players.
It's not the players. It's like, okay, who well.
Is it the fake news media?
It's the fake news media. It's the Washington Post. It's Andrew Golden of the Washington Post, the fake news media hack. Is who it is.
That's him.
Just kidding. He's done some great reporting all over this. It's confusing. It's complicated. I would like to talk about this on Wednesday. All you need to know is that the Marlins beat the Nationals 3 times. These games were ugly as hell.
First sweep of the year for the Marlins. Nats have lost 8 in a row. Brady House is getting called up. That's not going to fix them. Phillies sweep the Toronto Blue Jays. What a weekend for the Phillies pitching staff. Ranger Suarez dominant on Friday. He has been unbelievable since his first start back, which was very bad. He's been one of the best pitchers in baseball since then. Christopher Sanchez, awesome on Saturday. Phillies offense was bad. Doesn't matter. Phillies win 3-2. On Sunday, Zach Wheeler, awesome. Because, of course, he's Zach Wheeler, one of the best pitchers in the world, maybe the best pitcher in the world. Phillies offense wakes back up. 11 runs, 18 hits. Boom, Castellanos homers. 11-4 Phillies. Blue Jays, sad.
News we might have started with. Amazing feature on Zach Wheeler by a friend of the show, Matt Gelb. In which Wheeler insinuates, Gelb also insinuates, I guess, Gelb wrote it, Wheeler didn't, that Wheeler will retire at the end of his contract, which expires at the end of next year. I just want to say, not to sound like, oh, I know everything. Like, this is kind of an open secret. Like, this has been said, and it's part of the reason why Wheeler signed that contract in the way he did, where it was, like, shorter with a ton of money instead of longer. He does not, Zach Wheeler does not want to be bad in the major leagues. And he is willing to walk away before that happens. And I think that is what this is about. Is there a chance he adds another year on at the end if he still feels like he can get guys out? Absolutely. Let's talk about it in a year and a half. Rays go into Queens and sweep the Mets. First Mets sweep at home since Jorge Lopez threw his glove into the crowd at the end of last May. It has been over a year. These individual games, they all happened. I would say this was the least encouraging I've seen the Mets starting rotation in a series. In the first game, Clay Holmes was fine, not great. Paul Blackburn gets pummeled coming in relief in the sixth inning. Game two, Mets fans boo Tyler McGill after he allows 5 runs in the fourth inning. Game three, worst start of the year for Griffin Canning, walks 5. Jonathan Aranda is a hilarious, underrated Tampa Bay Ray. He's like a top 10 hitter in the world.
I got to just say, like, the fact there were a lot of nerds, and I say that as endearingly as possible, being like, Jonathan Aranda, breakout guy. And it was like, okay, sure. He's been unbelievable.
Nailed it.
So, yeah, good for him. A good series win for the Rays. And yeah, I mean, if not, they lose 9-0 on Sunday. It's their worst loss of the year, but they'll be fine. They are still 2.5 up on the Phillies. I was honestly surprised by that. In my head, with the Phillies sweeping and the Mets being swept, I was like, oh, it's going to be 1 game, 2.5 still.
The Mets have been sneaky hot over like the last 3 weeks, and the Phillies had a tough week, so that's how that gets obscured. Orioles sweeping the Angels at home. The Baltimore Orioles raise those eyebrows. Charlie Morton, 5 scoreless with 10 Ks in the opener. Christian Moore makes his MLB debut, but the O's win 2-0. Game 2, Sugano is met again. Mike Trout going yard off Tomoyuki Sugano is like this cool... It's just cool to see. That's just like history to me in a way. O's win 6-5. Game 3, Kikuchi nails 10 Ks but allows a lot of runs. Jordan Westberg is back. Gary goes yard for the second straight day. Orioles win a blowout 11-2. Orioles are 30-40. All right. 30 going on 40. W10 gets them to 500. They are playing better now. This is a better team. They are healthier. Colton Cowser is back. Jordan Westberg is back. They're getting the pieces. Can they win enough games to have Michael Elias not sell at the deadline? That remains to be seen.
Remember, American League, bad. So maybe they can get back in the mix.
Speaking of American League, bad.
Oh my gosh. Kansas City Royals. Yikes. They get swept at home by the YOLO A's. Luis Severino, fantastic on Friday. Austin Wins hits a home run. That was Jake and I finding out that Austin Wins plays for the A's.
Is that why you're wearing the Escogido hat?
Yes. Yes, it is. Not because Rafael Devers will never be traded by Escogido. Game two, Jacob Lopez, a soft-tossing lefty who the A's got from the Rays this offseason. He was fantastic. Max Muncy, Lawrence Butler hit home runs. Lawrence Butler, he's making the push. He is making the push to get to the All-Star game in Atlanta. We will see if he can do it. A's win that one 4-0. After that Saturday loss, the Royals hold a players-only meeting. We got to get it figured out, Bobby Witt Jr. says to Annie Rogers of MLB.com. Sorry, we have to figure something out. We have to change something. So the time was now, referring to the players-only meeting. So how do the Royals respond on Sunday? They take a 2-0 lead through five innings. We're not getting swept by the A's at home. No. Oh, wait a minute. Here comes Austin Wins batting cleanup for some reason. He hits another home run, and then Nick Kurtz homer off Carlos Estevez. First home run Estevez has allowed all season. A's take a 3-2 lead. They hold on. They win 3-2. They sweep the Royals. The Royals have lost six in a row. They're 34-38. Yikes.
Ouch. That Kurtz. Astros sweep the Twins. Game one, Chris Paddock blasted. Colton Gordon is fine. Jeremy Pena ups his OPS to 884. Game two, Hunter Brown is so awesome. I picked him to win the AL Cy Young, and he won't because of how many good pitchers there are in the American League.
What a loaded. I mean, this is one of the most fun award races we've had in a while.
12 Ks, seven innings, three hits, two runs. Astros, Cam Smith, walk-off single. They win 3-2, beating John Duran. Game three, Simeon Woods. Richardson was great, but so was someone named Brandon Walter, who I'm totally familiar with. Twins up 1-0 through eight. Astros score against Duran again to force extras. Mauricio Dubon, MLB's biggest Disney adult, hits a walk-off single in the 10th, and the Astros win 2-1. Astros won five in a row. They would have gotten some room in the division if the Mariners hadn't swept the Guardians.
Oh, baby. 16 hits for the Mariners on Friday. Zero from Cal Raleigh. How about that? We get homers from Rowdy and Jorge Polanco. Luis Castillo was very good. They win 7-2. On Saturday, George Kirby versus Tanner Bibee. That was a nice little pitching matchup. Close one. Then the Mariners come back against Class A in the ninth. First Class A blown save of the year. Or first Class A blown save loss of the year. The other games where he's kind of gotten hit around, they've still managed to win those games. Or he wasn't credited with the loss. Mariners win that one. Walk it off Jorge Polanco 4-3. And then on Sunday, Mariners just take it to him again. J.P. Crawford hits a grand slam. He has been tremendous. Talk about like... That is another huge reason why the Mariners offense is kind of back to being pretty solid. Emerson Hancock, seven scoreless innings. Mariners win 6-0. Still 4.5 back of Houston. But, you know, good series win for Seattle.
How do we have six more of these? Rangers over the White Sox.
Brewers. This was the last sweep. This was the last sweep. And this was the first extra inning game of the season for the Rangers on Saturday. Aaron Civale walked three in the first inning. Will Venable got ejected on behalf of Aaron Civale, who just got there. I love that. That's great. Will Venable,
that's
players
my
manager.
Guy.
Aaron Civale, nice to meet you. I'm going to go scream at Marvin Hudson because his zone is doo-doo.
That's my guy, Alex Civale.
Alex? Aaron. Aaron. Nice to meet you. Anyway, Rangers sweep the White Sox. White Sox, they're not very good. Brewers take 3 out of 4 over the St. Louis Cardinals. You already talked about Jacob Mizorowski on Friday.
Pretty good, though.
Freddy Peralta was very good. Yeah, I'm excited to talk about him more in the future. Freddy Peralta was great on Friday. Brewers win that one 3-2. There's some weird stuff going on. Wilson Contreras is beefing with Rhys Hoskins, of all people. Caleb Durbin's involved. I don't know what's going on here.
Durbin is running to first base on like a ground out, and Contreras kind of like gets into the base path, and Durbin in classic D3 fashion takes the foul like Arjen Robben.
That's our guy.
Like cutting in.
Look, he sells it well.
Contact was made, and Durbin is a hard charger. He can scoot. He goes flying. Contreras is a big boy. Yeah. This is Contreras' fault. Like, he steps into the base path, and Reese stands up for his guy, though. Reese, this was a hilarious moment, like, for us as, like, baseball watchers. You know, like, we've known Reese Hoskins now for 10 years since we met him in the dugout in Double A in Reading, and he's, like, one of the nicest dudes in baseball, and we have a large soft spot for him. And here he is standing up for a kid who played at the same college that I played at, and I was getting texts when he showed up on campus as a freshman that he could, like, had really good bat-to-ball skills and he could pick it at short. And, like, they're on the Brewers together, and I'm
tired. And Wilson Contreras was mad at both of them for some reason. So, anyway, Cardinals win that one. the Brewers bounce back on Sunday. Quinn Priester has been quietly fantastic for them recently.
Who?
Quinn Priester, he outduels Miles Michaelis. Christian Yelich hits a homer, and Brewers win 3-2. It's a nice series win for Milwaukee. Good for them. Arizona Diamondbacks take 2 out of 3 over the San Diego Padres. Corbin Carroll hits his 20th home run on Friday. They win 5-1. Oh, my goodness. This is a game we would have talked about more in a under normal circumstances. The Padres blow a 7-3 ninth inning lead with Robert Suarez on the mound. Don't trust relievers ever, 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 ever. Epic snakes comeback. They walk it off. Josh Naylor with like a tapper to the first baseman, and Geraldo Perdomo scores. D-backs win 8-7. The mentions on the Padres final score tweet on there are amazing. I recommend them. But the Padres, great angry win on Sunday.
Love
it.
Big angry
offensive
win.
Performance. Nick Pivetta was fantastic. 13 hits, including 4 from Tatis. Padres win 8-2. Cubs take 3 out of 4 over the Pittsburgh Pirates.
All one run games.
All one-run games. Tyon beats the Heen Dog. PCA hits his 18th home run on Thursday. Paul Skeens, ever heard of him? Coming
Omaha? He'll be here tomorrow.
Oh, baby. Paul Skeens, his ERA is 1.78. But the Cubs worked the pitch count up. They got him out after 5. Was he going to have another no decision? He was. But the Pirates managed to win for Paul Skeens again. God bless him. As the Pirates win in extras. 2-1. Game 3 on Saturday. Matt Boyd is fantastic. He has been fantastic for the Cubs. Shouts out, Matt Boyd. Love that guy. Hopefully, he's not taking the Oregon State loss too hard. Dansby hits a homer. Cubs win a one-run game again, 2-1. Then on Sunday, another close one. Colin Ray outduels Mitch Keller. Ian Happ walk-off single in the 10th inning. Cubs win 3-2.
Reds take 2 out of 3 over the Tigers in Detroit. Game 1 goes to the Tigers, though. 2 bombs from Gleyber. On Saturday, we get an unbelievable Ellie De La Cruz relay throw. He also goes yard in that game. 6 strong from Brady Singer. Homers from Stevenson, McLean, and Steer. Reds win in a rout 11-1. And then Ellie goes yard again in game 3, 16th of the season. Tigers bullpen game does not go well. Reds win 8-4. Ellie has been lurking. He hasn't been bad, but he hasn't gone full.
Not even close.
Not even
this
close.
We're starting to see it. Finally starting to see it. And the Reds are hanging around. Only team in baseball that has not been swept this year. And this is a great series win for them on the road to Detroit. Braves take 2 out of 3 over the Rockies on Friday. Ronald Acuna. This is a longer conversation. Holy crap, has he been unbelievable since
he's
going to
be at the All-Star game. He's going to be at the All-Star game.
Yeah, he should.
I'm telling you right now.
I mean,
100%,
not
he
that many games. He's getting there. I hope so. Braves win 12-4 on Friday. Then, even more encouraging than Ronald looking awesome, Spencer Strider. I know it's the Rockies, but he looked a little bit more like Spencer Strider. 13 strikeouts on. Spencer Strider strikes out 13 on Saturday. Braves win 4-1. Grant Holmes strikes out 15 on Sunday, and the Braves lose 10-1. Probably one of the weirdest box scores of the season. I don't totally understand how this happened. If I had more time, I would have stat-headed how many times this pitcher struck out 15 and lost, let alone lost by 9 runs. I don't know, but feels like a good weird one to end on at this chaotic episode of Baseball Overcast.
That's what happened in Major League Baseball. I'm in Omaha, Nebraska to report on college baseball. This is the most chaotic weekend of MLB we've had all year. And
yeah, I love it. Thank you for recording this podcast with me. Thank you to producer Andrew Hartz. And TJ Brassel for making this show possible.
Paul Skeens is going to be here tomorrow.
Allegedly.
The College
reportedly.
World Series.
Let me know.
Allegedly.
Livy Dunn was already there.
Livy Dunn was there. I'll talk more about the College World Series on Wednesday when I'm still here in Omaha. A lot of mops this week. A lot of opportunities.
Yep. We got 6-4 game series coming up this week, but we'll talk about that later. I think we get at least one mop this week. Let's get at least one mop. I'm flying to Arizona for the MLB Draft Combine. Will we talk about that at all on Wednesday? We'll see. I'm excited to hear from Sam Kennedy and Craig Breslow. I know we'll talk about that on Wednesday. Email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.